The Tony Greig Show.
Welcome to the Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.
News this week.
England certainly got off to a flyer in the first test against South Africa thanks to good knocks from Kevin Peterson and Ian Bell. We've come to expect great things from Peterson, who is by far the most naturally gifted batsman in this England team, but Bell is a different kettle of fish. He has made only one century in his last 27 innings, and his highest score in his last four innings was 21 not out. This innings will go down as one of his best, could be the making of him, but if he wants recognition, he just has to become more consistent. Bell's innings certainly helped England to a total of 593 for 8 declared. They'd have been very happy with that. What was surprising, especially after all the hype about the strength of this South African pace attack, was just how bad they were. Morne Morkel ended up with 4 wickets, but in general terms they were too short and just didn't read the wicket. There is no point in bowling too short in England, especially on a slow Lord's pitch. Spare a thought for Graham Smith. He won the toss and backed his quick bowlers to do the job, but they let him down badly. Perhaps Smith has overrated the ability of his pacemen. The England bowlers matched the discipline shown by their batsmen with a channeled display of bowling and fielding, with the result that South Africa were forced to follow on despite a workmanlike century from Ashwell Prince. Monty Panesar ended up with the best figures, taking 4 for 74. At the time of recording, South Africa are about to start the day, that's day 4, 333 runs behind and facing a huge task. It's likely that Panesar will bowl a lot of overs, and certainly these last 2 days, it may well be that England's trump card will be Panesar in that bowling department. South Africa will be praying for rain and hoping to sneak out of this test match with a draw. It's not easy to win a 3-test match series having lost the first test. Cricket commentators the world over are hailing the arrival of the new Mathai Muralidharan, a freakish Sri Lankan mystery spinner. Part-time Sri Lankan army trooper Ajantha Mendis threatens to turn cricket on its head with his mesmeric brand of spin, which defies convention and apparently includes off-breaks, leg breaks, googlies and even topspinners. The 23-year-old Mendis, who took an amazing 6 for 13 against India in the Asia Cup final, even had India skipper MS Dhoni conceding that his batsmen, some of the world's best players of spin, had been completely deceived during Mendis's spell. Mendis, who has 20 wickets at an average of 10.25 from his 8 one-day international, was named man of the tournament in the Asia Cup for his 17 wickets at 8.5. Now, those are breathtaking figures. Winning the Asia Cup was a superb performance by a Sri Lankan team that is so enjoying the great form of Sanat Jayasuriya in his twilight years and Kumar Sangakkara, who continues to pile on the runs. Murali will be enjoying the fact that there is another spinner in the side to help him tie down and dismiss the opposition. This victory has certainly set up the Indian tour of Sri Lanka. What a scrap that's going to be, and of particular interest will be how India handle Mendis. There are some strange decisions being made in the game at the moment, not least of which is MS Dhoni's complaint that he is too tired to tour Sri Lanka with the Indian Test team. It's common knowledge that Dhoni is now India's best paid cricketer, and rather like Sachin Tendulkar before him, it's very important that he sets the bar high and gets it all right. The way I see it, Dhoni has a duty to keep up with his colleagues and remain fit enough to play all international cricket. If he is that exhausted, he should have taken a break during the IPL. Players the world over were complaining that there was too much cricket until the IPL arrived, and now they have gone quiet on this subject because they want the cash, but they also want the rest. Hopefully Dhoni hasn't set a trend, because if top players around the world start pulling out of test and one-day international series on the grounds of fatigue, cricket will definitely suffer. There is no doubt that there is too much cricket. That was the case before the IPL. Now cricketers are confronted with a choice. Do they continue to try to persuade their respective boards not to overwork them, or do they simply tell the truth and tell their boards not to schedule any cricket during the IPL? The other problem that is looming is the possibility of players retiring sooner than they may have before the advent of IPL in order to top up their earnings toward the end of their careers. There's only one way to solve all this, and that is to ensure that all boards are reimbursed for the involvement of their players in competitions like the IPL. After all, if, for example, all of Sri Lanka's best players are refusing to tour England in favour of the IPL, there is only one loser, and that is the Sri Lankan board, and we all know they can't afford it. There will be some who will suggest that it's possible to have the best of both worlds by not arranging any cricket anywhere in the world while India run the IPL. This will give India access to all the best players in the world, and they will, as we already know, make millions every year out of the IPL. As it stands now, not a cent goes back to the boards who paved the way for the players in the first place. Haroon Lockhart, the new ICC chief executive, has raised concerns over the future of international cricket given the growing financial attraction of the IPL and has hinted at the need for a window for the IPL in the international calendar. This just can't be right. So get ready for a protracted fight between the various cricket boards of the world as India, already by far the wealthier cricket board, does its best to become even more wealthy at the expense of the rest and even possibly the game itself. England and South Africa have taken a bit of a stance against India, but it's a bit of a mystery why Australia have gone so quiet. After all, it's the Aussie players who are the best in the world, so their participation in any meaningful 2020 tournament is a must.
What's eating Tony Gregg?
Last week I came across some interesting observations made by former Pakistan batsman Amir Sahail. Sahail was talking about the plight of Pakistan cricket, where so often these days tours are cancelled because of the violence that is taking place in Pakistan. Sahail says what is happening in Pakistan is basically the result of Pakistan leading the war against terror. We are paying for fighting it. Countries such as Australia and England in particular are our allies in this war on terror, yet they are not supporting us here. Are we real allies or are we just being used, is the question that Sahail is asking. I've tried hard to see the situation from a Pakistan point of view and certainly have some sympathy for the position they find themselves in. This is, after all, a country that loves the game as much, if not more than most. On the other hand, surely Sahail and others of the same view must understand that when we talk about Aussie, New Zealand and English cricketers, we aren't talking about soldiers here. If Pakistan is not safe because of the war against terror, then it's the right of every cricketer to stay at home if he so wishes. This issue has already started to raise its head, and from what I can gather, if the Champions Trophy takes place in Pakistan, there will not be a full contingent of Australians in the team that they send, if indeed a team goes. To draw a comparison between the situations in South Africa, Sri Lanka and England, I think is clutching at straws.
My favourite cricketer.
With England going so well at Lord's, I thought I'd share a few thoughts on their softly spoken yet bubbly spinner, Monty Panesar. Panesar was born to Indian Punjabi parents and is the first Sikh to represent a nation other than India in Test cricket. He has a degree in computer science from Loughborough University and sports his trademark black putka while playing and has rapidly become the fans' favourite in England. With his huge hands, he has also become England's most prized spinner over the last decade. Panesar loves training and is beginning to become renowned for being a hard worker, regularly leaving practice ground after everyone else. According to reports, one day Monty and Australia's Mike Hussey spent the whole day in the nets together, and according to Andrew Strauss, who has captained him in four tests, Panesar will be on the ground earlier than anyone else, getting coaches to hit him catches, and he then bowls through most of the net sessions before staying out long after most of his teammates are back in the comfort of the dressing room, working on his batting, learning new shots and trying to perfect those he already has. The first time I saw Panesar live was in Australia when Duncan Fletcher decided to leave him out of the side and play Giles instead. This was one of the worst decisions ever. And anyhow, since then, Panesar has become an automatic selection in this England side and I have no doubt will improve on his already impressive test figures of 90 wickets at 31 apiece. And hopefully, he will never lose his natural attacking instincts and unrestrained and natural celebrations at the fall of each and every wicket. Monty Panesar is a cricketer who seriously possesses a love of the game.
One question only.
Right, the question this week comes from Jeremy, who writes from Manchester. Ricky Ponting has spoken of the need to preserve Test cricket. The ICC has said that they will look into a World Championship of Test cricket. What are your thoughts on it? Should there be a World Championship of Test cricket? How should it be organised? Well, I'm definitely in favour of any move that has as its main motive the desire to preserve Test cricket. The word preserve is important because Test cricket has been around since 1877, and for its first 100 years hardly had any competition. Then came the limited overs game, and while there were those who thought that the one-day internationals would bring about the end of Test cricket, they were wrong. To the contrary, one-day internationals are now cricket's bread and butter, and Test cricket is thriving. It now seems that many cricket lovers are seeking a quicker fix, and this has come in the form of 2020 cricket. Just because 2020 cricket has taken us by storm doesn't mean that Test cricket or one-day internationals, for that matter, will fade away. They won't, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to investigate ideas that will keep Test cricket top of mind. I think the Test Championship concept, leading to semi-finals and a final, and a definite world champion in each four-year cycle, does offer a chance to provide fans with a meaningful side competition without damaging the essential character of the Test match series. Hope that answers your question, Jeremy. Please don't forget to email your queries to tony@cricinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the place where you're from. I'll pick the best question and answer it in next week's show. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Cricket for Talk, signing off.
The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.